Welcome back to Aliyah Yomi. Today we are going to be learning together Noach Shlishi, the third Aliyah in Parshas Noach. Our Aliyah is made up of 22 psukim and runs from Perek Zayin, Pasuk Yud Zayin, to Perek Ches, Pasuk Yud Dalet. The main point of our Aliyah is the end of the Mabul, the way out of the Teva, of the Ark. The very basic summary of Aliyah goes as follows. We hear that the Mabul, this flood, is 40 days on the earth, and then the water brings the ark up so much that it is above all the highest of the mountains, so much so that it's 15 cubits above the highest mountain on earth. We hear that everything perishes, everything on the ground perishes, all the birds, all the animals, even the creepy crawlies perish. Anything which breathes is dead. And at this point in time, the only thing which is remaining of any establishment of any life form on earth is Noah and his family in the Teva. We hear that the waters remain at this height, at this level of magnitude, for 150 days. At which point, Hashem remembers Noah and all the animals, all the life forms on the Teva, and the waters start subsiding. Hashem blocks up the wellsprings of the depths, closes the windows of the heavens, and the rain stops. At which point in time, slowly it starts to ebb back to normal reality at the end of this 150 days. At which point it takes a they were talking about in the on the seventh month. It says on the 17th day. It now arrives, the Teva, the Ark, subsides down onto Horay Ararat, the mountains of Ararat. And the waters keep going until the 10th month, on the 10th of that month, then the tops of the hills appear. So Noach waits 40 more days, at which point in time he opens up the window and he sends off the raven. The raven flies back and forth but comes back to the Teva, at which point Noach sends or releases the dove, the Yonah, to see if the waters have in fact subsided from the ground. The Yonah does not find its rest and returns to it because the water is still covering the face of most of the earth. At which point, in 7 days more, he brings back the Yonah to send out, and it comes back in the evening with an Alei Zayis Taraf Befiha, with a olive branch in her mouth, and Noach knows that the water has finished. And at another 7 days later, he sends it again, and it does not return. So at this point in time, we hear that this is in the 601st year of Noach's life. We hear about on the first of a day of the month that all the water dries up from the earth. Noach opens up the Teva, and at this point in time, we're told it's on the 27th of the second month when the earth is fully dry. That is essentially one entire year later, because it starts on the 17th of Cheshvan, ends on the 27th of Cheshvan, which is a full year of 354 days, like 365 days, the 11-day difference between the lunar and the solar calendar. So a few things to ponder when considering this aliyah. What about the fish? Rashi points out, quoting the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that no, the fish did not die. They did not perish in this. It was only the terrestrial creatures. It's interesting to note that most of the animals that we know about today are terrestrial-based, are land-based. And avian, those are birds. We don't know so much. We have not classified most of the species that live in the oceans still today. How do the dates work exactly? So Rashi has a very complicated cheshbon where he points out that the numbering of the months may be back not from the beginning of the year, but from the waters. So for instance, Rashi points out that the flood started on the 17th of Mar Cheshvan. It rained for 40 days, which led to the 28th of Kislev. And then there were 150 days later is the first of Sivan. Sivan is called the seventh month because it's the seventh month from Kislev, which is when the rain and the flooding stopped. So it's complicated to work out. It's relative numbers of months, not objective numbers of months. It does say an interesting thing. It says that Noah, ach Noach, only Noach remained. Whenever the Torah uses the word ach, it's a limitation. It's excluding something. So almost as if not all of Noach survived. Rashi gives two possibilities, and that is yes. In fact, Noach had an encounter with a lion. He was trying to feed all the different animals, and he was not able to feed the lion in time, and the lion actually injured him. So he was injured. He wasn't fully himself. Another possibility is he was coughing, he was bringing up blood because of the incredible effort of caring for his ecosystem in his ark. So even though Noach does survive, he is worse for the wear for all the efforts that he goes through to in order to do this. Another question is, does Hashem really remember Noach? Meaning, does Hashem not remember beforehand? So Rashi explains that it is Hashem's Midas Hadin, his attribute of justice, which is being exercised and turned into a Midas HaRachamim, and that's what's being pivoted here. So Vayizkor is not about Hashem suddenly being reminded, but rather it is a pivot of his way of interacting with the world. It's interesting to note that this is in fact one of the psukim used in Zichronos, in the prayer of the Musaf on Rosh Hashanah, where we talk about Hashem, please remember us like you pivoted from Midas Hadin to Midas HaRachamim at the times of Noach as well. The Rosh HaKodesh explains that he remembered the suffering that Noach underwent. That means to say, looking back at all the different things that Noach had to do, all the suffering and the sacrifices he made, that is what's being recalled. Sometimes it's worthwhile noting that although we may not have all the zuchusim, all the merits, we may have suffering, and that itself is something to be worth being remembered by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now the question is, where is Ararat? So it is interesting to notice that today Ararat is actually a couple mountains which are found in the northeastern area in Turkey. So in just actually towards the border with Armenia, there are mountains which are snow covered called Ararat after this event. And there are searchers, there are many people who have claimed, over 200 accounts of people who have claimed to see parts of this of the Ark on Ararat since 1856. There's supposed to be a fragment of it in the museum in a certain cathedral in an Armenian church. But nonetheless, there haven't been scientific searches, but there are lots of claims that this is referring to the place where the Ark actually did rest. Another question to notice is, why is it that Noah waited 40 days before sending out the raven? So the Rosh Rabbeinu Asher actually quotes an interesting timeline, and he points out that if you count very carefully, then for the 150 days and the waiting and then the 40 days and the week, it turns out that he points out is that when he opened up and he started searching, it was on the 10th of Tammuz. A week later was on the 17th of Tammuz when he sent out the raven. That means to say that there's a certain remez, he says over here, le'tchilas. So that in a certain sense, sending out that raven was the starting of the process of a future exile of being separated, which is memorialized in this primordial sending as well. Very interesting perspective. Now, why did he choose the raven, and why would it not go? It seems that it did not come back, so it could be there was no place for it to rest. But it's also possible, as Rashi points out, that a very strange Gemara that he quotes, that it was concerned to leave its partner alone with Moshe, the female raven, behind, which is very strange. What does that mean? So the Gemara in Sanhedrin Kuf Ches explains the following. That really what the raven was saying is like this. Look, I'm a non-kosher species. And if there's only two of us and something happens to me that exhaustion, cold, I die, then that's the extinction of the entire raven species. And the raven was not willing to do that. So that's perhaps what it means, is that he was concerned leaving just his partner with Noah. There's nothing's gonna happen. There's never going to be a population of ravens. So why did Noah choose the raven? Meaning, why didn't he take more of a chance with a kosher species, which had a few extras? There were seven of each. So the Rav Sorotzkin in the Oznei Notori explains that Noach realized there was an insurance policy on the ravens, because if you remember, the non-kosher animals came by themselves to the ark because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is invested in the survival of the men, the survival of each species. The kosher animals Noach had to actually bring onto the Teva himself. That was extra. So Noach realized if Hashem was interested in the survival of the species, then it's almost likely that the raven is going to be the one that succeeds. Very fascinating perspective as to the, so to speak, the two perspectives, Noach and the raven, in this particular episode. Why is it the olive branch? So the Medrash Lekach Tov says because it came as one of the special fruits from the land of Israel, going on in a line of the Midrashic literature that the land of Israel was not flooded. And this is a symbol of being able to come back to the land of Israel. There's a lot of interesting ideas about it as well. And why the raven and then the dove? Why did you choose these two ideas? It's interesting to note that both of these animals have lifelong partners. But going along the Midrashic line that we just looked at, the raven has one partner in a sense of distrust. It would not leave its partner because of concern for there being some form of infidelity. So its clinging is because of a deep sense of distrust. Whereas the yonah, the dove, actually has a great sense of trust, which is why it comes back to its partner. So both of them clinging to their partners, but one seated in distrust, one seated in trust. And this is something which is very profound. The Noach is latching onto two very different modalities of relationship. With this, we close the third Aliyah. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful